Hello everybody, and welcome to Ancient Architects. Please subscribe to the channel for regular content on ancient architecture, as well as all of the latest news from the world of archaeology. There's an archaeological site in northern Israel, situated on the southwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee, and it's one of the most fascinating and important ancient sites, and hardly anyone is talking about it. It's one of the best preserved hunter-gatherer sites of the last glacial maximum. Yes, we're talking about a site 23,000 years old. It's called a Hollow II, and it's more than 11,000 years older than Göbekli Tepe, occupied at the junction between the Upper Paleolithic and the Epipaleolithic. And it wasn't a mere seasonal camp. It was a permanent settlement, occupied all year round, and also for many generations, which in the current state of knowledge is somewhat unique for a site so old. But it's what was discovered at this site that makes it so incredible. It contains two things that today, with the current level of research, can be called the world's oldest. Firstly, it has the world's oldest brush dwellings, but also, and most importantly, it contains evidence of the world's oldest small-scale plant cultivation some 11,000 years before the onset of agriculture in the Fertile Crescent. I discovered this site after watching the recent Joe Rogan podcast with Flint Dibble and Graham Hancock, as Flint discussed how we can see the beginnings of agriculture in the archaeological record. I started to look into the origins of agriculture and cultivation, and I had no idea I would stumble upon a Hollow II. I was surprised I'd never heard of it before, and why it's not a site more commonly talked about. Archaeologists classify the site as a 23,000-year-old fisher hunter-gatherer's settlement, a site so unique due to its excellent preservation of organic materials, which is particularly important for reconstructing diet, sustenance and camp life at the last glacial maximum. It's located on the shore of what was the fluctuating Lake Kinneret, what we today call the Sea of Galilee. The camp covered an area of at least 2,000 square metres, and most sites of this age are far smaller, usually under 500 square metres, and they don't often contain the remains of dwellings, and burials are scarce. But at a Hollow II, we find the remains of 6 brush huts, several adjacent open-air hearths, a pit, a stone structure, a refuse heap and a grave. The in-situ remains include charred seeds, fish, mammal and bird bones, flints, grinding stones, stone bowls, bone tools, twisted cord or rope and beads. The human grave contained the skeleton of a right-handed male. Interestingly, an incised bone object was found beneath the skull. The food remains indicate year-round occupation in the brush huts, which were made from local trees, and 3 of the huts had grass bedding on the floor, and this was made of weeds. Any site that's 23,000 years old is rare, and it's even rarer to find plant remains from this remote time. But at a Hollow II, 150,000 seeds and fruits were analysed, representing around 150 different species. The data provided was unprecedented, and we know these people heavily relied on large grain cereals such as wild barley, wild wheat and wild oats. The remains of fruit and seeds were found all over the site. Many grains were found concentrated around a grinding stone, and this was located on the floor of one of the huts. Microscopic cereal starch granules were also identified on the stone surface, and this indicates flour grinding. There are also small grain grasses like bromus, as well as acorns, pulses and wild fruits, all of which were consumed in the settlement. A variety of mammals were hunted and brought to the site, mainly gazelle, but also fallow deer, fox, hare, wild pig and wild cattle. Fish bones were also abundant, and this is not surprising with the camp being situated on the edge of a lake. fish were likely caught using nets, because dozens of stone net sinkers were discovered. Birds were also captured, with 83 different species identified so far, with the most common being the great crested grebe. Archaeologists analysed plant and animal remains to work out at what time of the year these hunter-gatherer camps were occupied, and amazingly, all of the seasons are represented at a Harlow too, meaning there was year-round occupation at the camp. It was a permanent settlement. And why not? It's the perfect location for sustenance. And if you didn't have to be mobile when the world's climate was so harsh, well, why would you be? And it's when people settle down that leads to human development, both socially and technologically. And that's exactly what we see at Ahalo 2 compared to other sites of the same age. So, what do I mean in terms of technology? Well, as stated, we find the oldest ever brush huts in the archaeological record, including the oldest use of grass bedding. These huts were up to 4.5 meters long and had an area ranging between 5 and 13 square meters. The floors of the huts were also lowered. The ancient people dug a shallow oval depression in the soft bedrock. Yes, they worked the stone, and the very centre of each hut was further lowered by 20 to 30 centimetres. A brush wall was built around the man-made bedrock depression using thick branches of local trees, including oak and willow. Smaller leaf-bearing branches and grasses were then placed on top. No post holes were identified in excavations because such a technique did not require the use of heavy logs for a central support. In one of the huts, isolated stones were found beneath the floor, each placed between 20 and 40 centimetres apart. They look to have been deliberately placed, and some of them were positioned vertically. What they were used for, we don't know, but the tops of these stones were poking through the floor, so they may have supported some kind of wooden installation, making it slightly raised off the floor. Along the northwestern edge of one of the huts, pebbles and stones were found to form a loose arch, the stones mainly being made of basalt, and many of them were found to be erect. Broken workstone implements were also incorporated into this line. It's believed that this arch acted as a perimeter of the hut, maybe to support thick diagonal wall stakes. One hut used a large flat basalt stone as the floor inside, carefully placed on lenses of yellow sand that was brought into the hut, with several small pebbles set into the sand to secure the large stone in a firm manner. This specific dwelling also showed three successive phases, with three different floors built on top of each other. Each dwelling contained high densities of charcoal and organic remains. Some of them also contained stones, which were possibly for domestic purposes, such as being used for grinding and also as an anvil, and others could have supported a doorframe. At Ahalo 2, the hearths were always located outside of the huts. There was no burning inside, and we find six concentrations of fireplaces. It's amazing to see that 23,000 years ago, people were living in permanent settlements, and they were working both stone and wood, 11 to 12,000 years before the pre-pottery Neolithic sites of the Fertile Crescent. There was other stonework outside of the huts as well, such as a flat stone set erect near a stone circle, adjacent to the only grave that was found at the site. Maybe this stone had a symbolic meaning, and it was an integral part of a grave complex. There are also more than 100,000 flints found in the excavations. There were cores, primary elements, core trimming elements and bladelets, as well as tiny debris on the floors of the huts. It seems as though flint knapping was an indoor activity. There were also several examples of flint piles on the floor, maybe indicating a storage area in each hut. The floor of what archaeologists call Hut 1 shows very specific piles of debris inside. There was a pile of flint near the entrance, and also a pile of fish bones on another part of the floor, indicating that fish were likely kept indoors, inside some kind of baskets. Maybe they were even hanging from the walls. At the end of their use life, the huts were purposefully burned before the settlement was abandoned, which was most likely because of the rising lake levels. Therefore, finding piles of remains on the floor could indicate that some things were actually hung on the wall before the burning, leaving a deposit on the floor. Indoors there were also large quantities of bones, from gazelle, fallow deer, hare and fox, indicating food consumption inside, but could also indicate storage. There are also bones from bird and rodent. Two stone bowls were also found, one in Hut 3 and one in Hut 13. Each bowl was found face down on the floor, and no other bowl fragments were found anywhere else on the floor. Each bowl had a series of incisions on the inner face, and so their placement on the floor of the hut could be part of some kind of symbolic behaviour, with chosen objects being placed on or under the floors before the huts were burned down in some kind of ceremony. This was a well-developed and organised settlement, and the finds indicate year-round occupation in a settlement that was large for its time and in use continuously over many generations. But even with all these amazing finds, the big one is that Ahalo II shows evidence of the world's first ever cultivation of plants, long before Neolithic farming, and this is all thanks to the study of weeds. As stated in a research paper from 2015, weeds are currently present in a wide range of ecosystems worldwide. The paper says, quote, "Although the beginning of their evolution is largely unknown, researchers assume that they developed in tandem with cultivation since the appearance of agricultural habitats some 12,000 years ago. These rapidly evolving plants invaded the human disturbed areas and thrived in the new habitat." End quote. In the paper, the scientists presented unprecedented new findings of the presence of proto-weeds and also small-scale cultivation at Ahalo II. They examined all of the plant remains and identified 12 well-known weeds, and these were mixed with numerous seeds of wild emmer, barley and oats. The analysis provided the earliest evidence of a human-disturbed environment, more than 11,000 years before the known onset of agriculture. The people were preparing the ground, providing the conditions needed for what they call proto-weeds, which suggests we're actually looking at the earliest evidence in the archaeological record of a small-scale attempt to cultivate wild cereals. The domestication of crops can take many, many generations, and just because the cereals found at Ahalo II were predominantly of the wild variety, it doesn't mean that the people of Ahalo II had not started early agricultural processes. And there is evidence of cultivation in the crops as well, and we know this by looking at plant scars, which, in basic terms, is where the seeds are attached to the plant. In wild varieties, the seed or grain falls easily from the plant stem, but in the domestic varieties, they're tougher. You can learn more about this from Flint Dibble at 3 hours and 4 minutes in the Joe Rogan podcast. I've left a link below. Wild and domesticated scars are different, and at Ahalo II we do find both types. But there are far more domesticated scars represented in what we would expect to be a wild population. 36% of the scars on the barley samples were domestic, and 25% of the wheat sample scars were also domestic. There does look to have been an evolutionary change in the crops, and such changes can be seen in just a few dozen generations of selection. So, experts believe a Hollow 2 was in an early stage of cultivation, what they call trial cultivation. As well as the crops and the weeds, we also have to look at the associated tools that were found at the site, and these include sickle blades, and they show usewear polish produced by cereal harvesting. The specific usewear on the tools indicates the cultivation of near-ripe semi-green wild cereals, shortly before the grains are ripe and dispersed naturally. So, there is plenty of evidence to show we could well be looking at a very early phase of agriculture, but one that did not last long at this location, and that was likely because of the rising lake levels, which would eventually submerge their settlement and their farmland. But we know the inhabitants of a Hollow 2 were living a sedentary lifestyle, and so it does make sense that they were thinking of the optimal ways to guarantee sustenance and survival, especially as it was the height of the last glacial maximum. Cultivation does seem to be a natural evolution for a human settlement, however old it may be. There is no archaeological evidence for the continuation of cultivation following the life and demise of the settlement. We don't know what happened to the people, whether they settled elsewhere and continued cultivating, or if they lived a more mobile lifestyle. We only know about the lifestyle of the people of a Hollow 2 because of the unique nature of this archaeological site, the burning of the huts and their contents, and then quickly being submerged. Both processes have helped preserve the site for 23,000 years. Maybe at this time, there were many other settlements cultivating on a local scale, but the archaeological record has simply not preserved it. We just don't know. Evidence shows that 10,000 years later, agriculture on a large and wide scale took hold. But what we learn from a Hollow 2 is that when conditions are right, when people move to a more sedentary lifestyle, agriculture can follow. I imagine in the period between 23,000 and 12,000 years ago, cultivation did continue for some populations and settlements, but in a more localised way. Some groups of humans would have lived a mobile lifestyle, living in seasonal camps as hunter-gatherers, but other people, like those of a Hollow 2, hunted, yes, fished, yes, but also started small-scale cultivation. Before the Neolithic, which started sometime around 12 to 13,000 years ago, we're seeing that humans did have the skills and also the knowledge for agriculture. It's just that there's no evidence it was adopted on a large scale. And that's because for many people, sedentism was not the optimal way to live during the Ice Age. And this does make sense in such a harsh climate. But of course, things did change, and large settlements did emerge. What I've learned from looking at ancient sites like Malta in Siberia, a Hollow 2 in the Levant, the caves of the Jura Mountains in southern Germany, Tel Caramel in Syria, as well as Kartik Tepe, Bonçuklu Tarla and Çakmak Tepe in Turkey, is that humans were developing skills and evolving for thousands and thousands of years. By the time of Göbekli Tepe, people knew how to hunt, fish and cultivate. They knew how to build and work stone and wood. They knew how to plan a settlement, build dwellings, make tools and weapons, and their artistry was already mind-blowing. Therefore, when sedentism finally took hold, when large groups of people finally came together and settled in places that would become large sites like Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe, I am absolutely not surprised by what humanity went on to achieve. The skills were already there, and so large-scale sedentary living meant people finally had the time, labour force and sustenance to take everything to a new level. And the rest, as they say, is history. Thank you very much for watching this episode of Ancient Architects. If you enjoyed the video, please subscribe to the channel, please like the video, and please leave a comment below. Thank you very much.